Everybody, Rob here. Before we get into tonight's recap of The Walking Dead mid-season premiere, I just wanted to take a moment and mention The Good Fight. It's the next chapter of The Good Wife story. It's a CBS All Access original set in the world of The Good Wife. The Good Fight is from the creators of The Good Wife. Robert and Michelle King are back as showrunners with Christine Baranski reprising her role as Diane Lockhart. Diane is at the end of her career, planning retirement, but loses everything in a Ponzi scheme and now has to rebuild her life. Cush Jumbo is back as Luca Quinn, and Luca is finding her footing after joining the new law firm, and Rose Leslie is joining the cast as Maya Rindell. Maya is just beginning her career as a lawyer when her father is accused of starting the Ponzi scheme that ruined Diane. You know who used to be a big part of the world of The Good Wife? None other than Negan himself, Jeffrey Dean Morgan. And a lot of the guest stars you know from the world of The Good Wife will be back, including Carrie Preston, Gary Cole, and Matthew Perry. And just like The Good Wife, The Good Fight will not shy away from controversial issues of the day. New episodes are going to be on CBS All Access on Sundays beginning February 19th. So to check it out and start a free trial of CBS All Access, go to cbs.com/goodfight. That's cbs.com/goodfight. The Walking Dead mid-season premiere is over, but we're just getting started here on The Walking Dead post-show recap. And now here are the guys that are just a humble platoon of sorghum farmers. I'm Rob Sisterdino, along with Josh Wiggler and also Alex Kidwell. Gentlemen, hello.
Yes.
Woo.
The sorghum, the grain, the wheat. You got to imagine that the sorghum farmer shout-out was literally just for us. Like, who else is paying attention to sorghum anymore? Who else is tracking that in The Walking Dead fandom other than this very podcast?
Yes. Thank you so much to Robert Kirkman for including that. I must be a super fan of the post-show recap of
Obviously.
Walking Dead.
I got to imagine that that's the case.
Even the actress who plays Deanna isn't aware of this anymore.
No.
Yes. We are all over.
Yeah. She's moved on.
No, she still has sorghum dreams. I can't imagine that she doesn't. I think that she just goes to bed thinking of sorghum.
Yes. All right. Josh Wiggler, how was your Walking Dead off-season?
Oh, you know, it wasn't really much of an off-season. I mean, you and I, this past week, we finished off our Walking Dead season one rewatch. We went back and watched the first six episodes of The Walking Dead to tide us over in the off-season. It was perfect timing. 6 weeks of Walking Dead. Very fun stuff. If you haven't gone and listened to that, I highly recommend it. I feel like I've just kind of been in the zombie apocalypse, but it is a jump from season one back into season seven for sure.
It is a jump. Of course, back with us from the jump of this new season, Alex Kidwell. Alex, how are you doing?
Doing good. Yes, rising like the perpetual zombie that I sort of kind of am not, I guess. Yeah, it's been a good off season. I took this time to completely immerse myself in the Walking Dead comics lore. So,
oh, nice.
I checked up a couple issues before, but now I'm almost fully caught up with where the comics are, and it's exciting. It's cool to have the comparison now.
Yeah, I heard that you were loading up Walking Dead comics into your car from the library, Father Gabriel style.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Frickin' Father Gabriel,
you know,
man.
Just like Father Gabriel, I was accessing resources that weren't mine and just taking them and bringing them back, you know, whenever I feel like it. So, yeah, the library, very much my Alexandria.
Is that why in the back of my Walking Dead graphic novel that I let you borrow, you just scribbled in boat in the back page?
Oh, was I not supposed to do that?
Yeah. I thought you were like spoiling my Christmas present.
Well, I was going to let you know
year.
Where I was going to leave it. Like, that was my return box.
Got
so hopefully you'll find the boat and you'll get your novel back.
Strand's boat? If only.
Yes, that's where you can find Father Gabriel. No, actually, that's still a mystery. We will talk that through. And rising up, that's the slogan here for the back half of Walking Dead season 7, right?
Yeah, hashtag resist, resist. The resistance is here.
Well, I knew another bunch of people from Atlanta that were thinking the same thing.
Ooh.
And it didn't go well for them.
The Vatos?
No, the Falcons.
Sports.
Yeah, okay. The statute of limitations on that.
Yes.
Okay, so very excited to have you guys back here. Of course, we are not live tonight for the Walking Dead premiere, and this season, we are going to be taking a break from doing the live show, but we're going to be bringing you the audio version of these podcasts. We found that most people consume the audio version of the show, so we do apologize to those of you guys who were joining us on Sunday nights. You can still send us your questions. And of course, we will be having our Walking Dead feedback show coming up later in the week. You could send your questions into us either via email, twd@postshowrecaps.com or postshowrecaps.com/voicemail. And of course, you could subscribe to our podcast at postshowrecaps.com/TWD iTunes. So I guess, Josh, why don't we just pick things up big picture? And I know that you are very high on this premiere of The Walking Dead season 7. Why are you so into this premiere?
Okay, well, I think that, you know, so if you've been listening to me on the podcast in, you know, recent weeks over the course of season 7, I think towards the, you know, certainly at points in season 6 as well, I have not been super high on The Walking Dead. I have not been very thrilled with this show lately. I think that it's been spinning its wheels. I think it's really, really bleak. I did not love the premiere. I did not like how they handled their cliffhanger. I did not like that there was a cliffhanger to begin with. So allow me to be the first to pay Walking Dead a compliment when I think it's due. I think that this was the best episode of The Walking Dead in a long time.
Wow.
I think that this is the best episode of The Walking Dead since season 5. I'm just trying to think back. What's an episode of The Walking Dead that I enjoyed more than the mid-season premiere tonight? I think maybe the closest competitor would be like JSS from season 6, from the very beginning. I think I like this one more than JSS.
What about the black and white episode, the season 6 premiere?
I liked that, but it's kind of unmemorable to me. It's sort of unremarkable.
It was black and white.
It was black and white. I guess that was kind of cool. That was sort of neat. But other than that, I think that, you know, season 6 really, that first half of the season especially is so slow. I keep talking about how it takes place over the course of one day and that's absolutely ridiculous, this coming from a big 24 fan. And the back half of season 6, I'm not a huge, huge fan of. And this first half of season 7, I thought was all over the place, literally at times where we're just, you know, kind of crawling through and focusing on only a character or two at a time. The Tara and Heath episode comes to mind. And I think what was great about this one was everyone's together. You see the gang working together as a crew. There is a sense of hope for the first time in a very long time. Keep hope alive. You know, we've got a real sense that maybe, you know, like bad things will continue probably to happen. This is The Walking Dead, but for the first time in a while, there's a sense, not just in terms of the show, because you assume that the good guys are going to win out in the end, but within the group, there's a sense of like, I think we can do this. I think if we pull ourselves together, we can do it. And I'm also never going to be mad at any time two people clothesline a horde of zombies with a car and a steel cable. This is The Walking Dead's version of Fast and Furious, and I thought that was incredible.
Yeah, I think that was probably one of the best action sequences that they've ever pulled off
in a long time, if not ever, yeah.
Yeah. Brilliantly executed, and as you were saying,
very kitschy but really fun.
Very, very fun moment that happens on the show. I'm not sure why they needed to do that.
They didn't.
Yeah.
Well, it's really very much in the same vein of let's turn the high pressure fire hose on the zombies,
right,
and just turn them into liquefied goo. It's fun. Does it serve a purpose? You know, up to interpretation, but it's definitely fun.
That's the kind of thing. I think fun is the operative word for me with this premiere. This was a really fun episode of Walking Dead. It was, you know, it was great to see everybody back together, but like even little interpersonal dynamics, I thought, were really well played tonight. Like when Rick leaves Daryl behind at the kingdom and Daryl is not happy to be there. And Rick's like, talk some sense into Ezekiel. Or stare him into submission, because like that's what Daryl's already doing in that moment, because
right,
that's so Daryl. Or when Rosita and Sasha are having a moment and, you know, Sasha's just like trying to talk to Rosita about her take on the kingdom. And Rosita's like, girl, please, you know, we don't need to talk. We had sex with the same dude. We had sex with the
dead
same
guy.
Dead guy. That's really about it. We're not friends, which I thought I just loved that was like a really honest moment to those two characters. I think there was a lot of that throughout the episode. And I think going back to what you just mentioned, Alex, the Gratom scene where I think it's Abraham or no, it's Eugene who sprays the fire hose at everybody. That's early season 5. And that stuff was fun. I love season 5 of The Walking Dead. And it's a season that has a lot of fun in the midst of a lot of darkness. And I think that's something Walking Dead really, really desperately needs, especially after what I think that first half of this season was perhaps the bleakest period in Walking Dead history. So to come back with something that was this full of life really surprised me. I did not think Walking Dead still had that in it. And so I think more than anything, maybe it's the shock factor that I'm shocked at how much I enjoyed an episode of The Walking Dead this far into the run.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the show came back tonight with a optimistic tone where we are now on the offense. We have people coming together, even though King Ezekiel still has yet to turn his key. You get the sense that he definitely will. We had our heroes end up getting the jump on Negan's crew. They're like getting explosives. It seems like that they are building up assets and it seems like that they're going to launch a strike against Negan. Now, Alex, if it turns out that they launch this attack on Negan and it is unsuccessful, or they take a step backwards, do you feel like that we're going to be right back where we were before this season and a half started?
I guess it, you know, it all depends on the manner we go about it. But yeah, it's hard to envision a scenario where this goes backwards and it doesn't kind of put us back in some kind of a bleak position. But, you know, how many, you know, it's interesting because the last time they messed up, Negan didn't really make much of an example. I mean, I guess unless you count Olivia and Spencer, which some people surely do, but
I'm still sad about Olivia.
It doesn't really have the impact of the Glenn and Abraham. So I don't know, but. You gotta, if you're taking this chance, you gotta win.
Yeah.
If you lose, you're in real trouble.
Now, far be it from me to critique Negan and his leadership, but I feel like that it seems like a really big missed opportunity for Negan to not set up some sort of an embassy in the hilltop in Alexandria, where he has a ambassador of sorts, slash sort of like somebody who's just sort of keeping tabs on what's going on there. There's a lot of people moving about. Seems like that having somebody within the walls of these places would let him know, hey, Maggie is still alive. Daryl is still alive. Hey, everybody went to the hilltop. Hey, they've got explosives. Seems like that Negan is really not doing a great job of keeping tabs on everything going on in his real corner of the world, Josh.
Yeah, no, in hindsight, it would be great to install loyalists, like people who are just like saviors to the max in these places. That being said, I think that the very concept of like bashing in Glenn's brains and Abraham's brains and insert name here's brains for whichever community you're talking about, the kingdom or the hilltop or whoever, I think the whole concept of that is to create loyalty, is or at least to create an ownership over these people and to get them so scared to take them to Pee Pee Pants City and to leave them there and never let them come back. It's a one-way ticket and you are just going to be serving us from now on. You're just going to swear fealty. And it seems like it's worked out all the way through meeting these Alexandrians. This is the first group of people that are really showing true signs of resistance. So in hindsight, yeah, that would be great if he just had like a Simon for every community. Also, because that would mean an army of Simons and that would be incredible. Just multiple Stephen Oggs on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they just haven't encountered the kind of resistance that they're about to encounter right now.
Yeah, he's been dealing with a lot of Gregories and this is his first Rick.
God, Gregory was so good in this episode too. That's the thing. Like Xander Berkeley was incredible in this one. Like everyone had a moment. There were moments all across the board. It's great.
Yeah, the Gregory scene was very funny, but do you feel
rhetorical?
Like, yeah. is he almost a caricature of himself at this point where he still can't get Maggie's name right?
I mean, is Maggie short for Margaret, right? So I think he was just being formal.
He
got it, and then he was being informal with Rick. He calls him Ricky. So, you know, he's close. He's in the zone, you know? He's like, he's maybe not a bullseye, but he's, you know, he's like, what is it? Is red close to the bullseye? I don't know. Whatever the next color behind the bullseye. Archery puns tonight because of lots of archery jokes happening.
So a lot of stuff going on in this episode. Let's bounce around a little bit. Let's talk about the big Father Gabriel controversy. And I think it's still unclear what Father Gabriel's intentions are. Alex, do you have a take on Father Gabriel? Was he up to no good, or is there some master Father Gabriel plan which is yet to be revealed? Father Gabriel works in mysterious ways.
Yeah, the number one Father Gabriel fan over here, by the way, Alex.
Yeah, as leading Father Gabriel apologist on the panel, I am obligated to take the Rick perspective, which I wouldn't have thought that Rick is one to immediately assume that Gabriel's on the up and up, but
Gabriel, you know, Gabriel's a good guy. He's a fine babysitter.
Yeah. Who'd have thought we'd ever hear Rick saying that?
Yeah.
Rick used to hate this guy.
Yeah.
But I think it really speaks that, you know, the fact that he's left his Bible, which we know is important to him. It's like his only possession and his only tie back to his old life in the old world. And he's written some details in it that has led them to a new group. So who knows what's going on with Gabriel? Who knows where any of this is coming from? Who knows if, like, he may have encountered this group at some point. I have really no idea what to make of this.
Give me a definitive answer.
I want to trust.
Yes. Is he up to no good? Yes or no?
No.
No. Josh,
I don't think he's got bad intentions here. I think that he's either like he met the Boots guy. I think that these people that we're seeing at the end of the episode, I think they're affiliated with Boots Man. Unfortunately, I don't think that it's actually going to be Jim from season one who is mysteriously alive. Maybe Morales. Who knows? It's still possible.
Great. If it was Morales,
it'd be an incredibly deep cut return for Morales from season one of The Walking Dead, who just drove off into the distance, never to be mentioned again. I think that, you know, him writing down Boat and he seems kind of rattled. Maybe the Boots guy like pressured him into it or something like that. Something weird is going on, obviously. It would be such a step back for Father Gabriel to just be douching it up again, which is not impossible because Walking Dead loves to take steps backwards. I think that this is probably more like a situation of either duress with these people or some sort of alliance that he's forging with these new people.
Yeah, maybe he's stumbled upon like a secret sect of born again Christian. I've got the in for these people. Yeah. This is my time to shine.
Yeah, he's a new flock.
Now, couldn't Father Gabriel be going back to his roots? Isn't the Father Gabriel origin story that he took all of the canned goods right. and hid them from the church, right?
Yeah, and locked them all out yes. and let them all yes. die. Certainly, it would, like I said, like it would be stepping backwards, but Walking Dead does take steps backwards. I think that the arc, and Alex, you could speak to this even better because you love Father Gabriel so much, but I think the arc for him has been an arc of improvement, of him not being such a little whiny biatch, of him just kind of coming into his own and being a member of the group and proving himself to Rick and being the guy who took baby Judith under his shirt during the Alexandria crisis in the middle of season six. And I don't think that there's a lot of setup for him to really step backwards intentionally. So it would really, I guess it wouldn't come out of completely nowhere because like maybe it is just like some long con and ruse and Gabriel has just been like waiting for his moment to really, really freak out and leave. But it feels like that would be a little bit of a left turn at this point.
So wasn't it only like three episodes ago where Spencer proposed basically the same idea? Yes. Didn't Gabriel like slap him right in the face?
Yeah, more or less.
Baby or something?
Yeah, pretty much.
So I'm with you guys. I think that Father Gabriel is probably on the level and he's up to something positive. But what is the connective tissue between Father Gabriel and Bootsman and the boat? How does Father Gabriel know anything about these people, where to go, where to meet up with them? Was there anything from last season?
Boots McGee.
He was standing on a vantage point at the beginning of this episode. Maybe he could see very far.
Yeah.
Like a smoke signal?
Yeah, my recollection of the mid-season 7 finale was, you know, Father Gabriel is on watch, and then we saw Boots Guy in the foreground. So I think maybe, like, the leap that you make there is that Boots Guy made contact with Gabriel, and we didn't see that on the show. Which I feel like is like crummy storytelling for a TV show. I'll say that. But I think that that seems to me to be what happened. I think that there's something that we didn't get to see yet. I think there was something that we weren't privy to just so that we could have that cold open where everybody in the universe at once screams out in terror, Father Gabriel, no! I think it's really just like play into the expectations of this is such a classic Father Gabriel thing to do, only to subvert them later in the episode. And I think they withhold that meeting of Boots Guy to really maximize that impact.
Twitter was not happy about Father Gabriel tonight.
Never is. Never
is. It would be the classic Father Gabriel move, though. Just preach all the good things and then like sneak out.
Yeah. Twitter came for Father Gabriel's wig tonight. They snatched it. Much like Father Gabriel snatched all of the cans.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Just all right. Leave my wig alone.
Let's go back to the kingdom and really let's check back in with Ezekiel. We have not really seen what's been going on here for quite some time in the kingdom proper. And so a lot of politicking going on in terms of the different members of Ezekiel's cabinet after Jesus pays a visit to try to bring everybody on board. And then we obviously get to see Rick and the rest of the crew go and talk to Ezekiel. We have a reunion with Morgan. Morgan finds out about all of the different people that died. Carol does not yet know what's going on. And we haven't had a Carol encounter with Rick's group, right?
No, not yet. But I mean, it's on the table, right? Daryl is at the kingdom now. Morgan is keeping Carol's existence a secret because that's the promise he made. That's what Carol wants. Carol doesn't want to be involved with the group anymore because that means she's probably going to have to kill people. And she doesn't want to have to kill people anymore. She just wants to be left alone. So Morgan is holding true to that. Man of his word. But Daryl's in the kingdom. Daryl is clearly going to run into Carol. That's how she's going to get back into the mix. That's definitely just going to happen.
Yes, and we reunite with the very hawkish Sir Richard, who's been looking for any excuse to go after Negan. Is Sir Richard like the chairman of the Kingdom Armed Services?
Yeah, like the sergeant
the
at arms.
Secretary?
Yeah, he was certainly not. You know, Jerry's got the PR chain covered. So, you know, I think, yeah, Richard is, you know, filling the roles that need to be filled. And it looks like, you know, military advisor. Who's really doing that right now?
Yeah.
So that needs to be his role. He seems to be the one guy who recognizes the sense of urgency. Granted, he was the one guy that the Saviors beat up when they came to make a delivery.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he seems to get it on a level that his people just don't yet. And, you know, he wants to be there and he sees the bigger picture, but you can't get everyone on the same page yet, it seems.
It was a great moment when the Alexandrians roll up to the kingdom and the two, you know, knights, Richard and his buddy, they show up on horseback. It's first off a great shift from, halt, who goes that? Oh, it's just you, Jesus. Like, they just, like, drop the pretense. That was really good. But also, Richard is, like, such a D to these guys at first. He's like, yeah, just hand over your guns. I don't know what kind of, you know, trade you're trying to make here or what sort of protection racket. It's not, we're not into it. There's a bigger problem than that. And then Jesus has the great line of, you know, Richard, I don't think I've ever seen you smile before. I think that's going to change today. Like, I just thought that that was a really good moment. And even the shift in Richard when Rick and everybody show up to King Ezekiel and start talking about what it is they're really going to do. Just like the shift in Richard there from him being like the number one skeptic of these guys to being their biggest cheerleader within Ezekiel's crew. I thought was a really cool shift.
So, Josh, tell me, what did you think about Rick going and having that encounter with King Ezekiel? Because, you know, Rick Grimes has seen a lot over the years.
Indeed.
And for him to be thrust into the world of the kingdom and Ezekiel and the whole thing where it's like a court and they're on a stage and there's a tiger.
Everyone's reaction to the tiger was really great.
Yeah.
Too, yeah.
I wasn't sure if Rick was going to role play and play along with what was going on with King Ezekiel.
He just slips into his natural Andrew Lincoln British accent.
Yeah, he really did. I felt like play the part of somebody coming to visit the king.
Yeah. Sir Rickard Grimes.
Perfect courtier, as it were.
Yeah. No, he plays into it really. He plays into it really well. I don't know. I think at this point, like you said, I think that Rick's been around the block. He has seen some weird things in his time here in the apocalypse. Never forget the time that he was locked in a train car for who knows how long by a bunch of cannibals. Like, he's used to seeing human, you know, humanoid forms feasting on humans, but not humans feasting on humans. He's seen a lot of strange stuff. That I think by the time that he has, you know, reached the kingdom, there's probably a part of him being like, oh, this is so bizarre. But I kind of need this, guys. I guess I'm just going to. Plus, I have this sweet medieval story in my back pocket that I haven't had an excuse to bust out in a long time. I think this guy's really going to like it.
Well, Rick goes into this really long story that he just happened to have in his back pocket. I mean, do you think that this was actually a story that Rick heard when he was a kid?
If not, then he's just an incredible improviser. Yeah. Just like to really just like come out with that.
Like the Robin Williams of the apocalypse.
It was, you know, it was a really captivating story. There was a real epic quality to this episode, and I think especially an epic quality to this scene in the kingdom and seeing Rick and everybody come to the kingdom. It was the most Game of Thronesy this show has ever felt, where he rolls up and like the music is kind of like building and it's really exciting underneath Rick telling this story. And you're really, at least I was really entranced by it. And so much so that when Rick says, like, at the bottom, there was a bag of gold, and Jerry's like, awesome.
Yeah.
Like, it's the first moment where you're like, oh, God, that's right. This is a story. Like, there's other people in the room who are listening to this thing. But it was so magnetic throughout the telling of the story. I thought it was great. I loved that scene.
My mom told me about a story about a road, and there was a bunch of walkers in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
And then there were two cars and there was a wire and they ran, clotheslined them all.
And we clotheslined them. It was neat. It was really, 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 really cool when we did that in the future.
Wow. Yeah. So let me just get this straight. So the king intentionally put this rock in the road, but he buried gold underneath the rock so that everybody would, like, you know, get killed and, like, get hurt. And, like, all of the imports coming into the kingdom would all get ruined. But then he put a reward underneath the thing that he set up. Does that sound right?
Yeah. And, you know, like, when you put it that way, the king kind of seems like a douche.
seems counterintuitive.
Yeah. Well, he was probably more of like, you know, the philosophical kind of king as opposed to the practical kind of king. Yeah. So, you know, there have been plenty of those over the years.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine a king putting a policy in place that's intentionally designed to hurt people. So it was just a very, very strange move by this king.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, maybe he was like a mad king.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Perhaps.
Putting out his nails.
Mayhaps. Yeah. Mayhaps.
But we didn't end up getting King Ezekiel on board. Alex, what do you think has to happen for Ezekiel to sign the authorization to go to war?
Well, I think first you got to get Morgan on board, because Morgan is kind of a linchpin bridge between these guys and Ezekiel. And ultimately, even Morgan was thinking we got to explore other options.
Pretty lame of Morgan to be like, yeah, I had to kill someone so I could protect Carol. And you're like, oh, sweet. Morgan, you're finally on board. You're back on message. And then Morgan's like, let's not kill again. And everyone's like, God damn it, Morgan.
This Aikido stuff again? Really? Here we are.
I can train you how to fight with sticks.
Do you think that it will take something drastic for King Ezekiel to get on board? And specifically, do you think that we will see somebody close to Morgan end up paying the ultimate sacrifice to Negan, specifically Benjamin or Benjamin's little brother, Alex?
Yeah, I got my eye on Prince Benjamin real hard right now.
Visibility spike.
Yeah, you know, the kids, he's finally mastered his Aikido training. He's developing a little bit of confidence. He's taking his steps out in the world. That seems to be like right about the time when he becomes a martyr.
Yeah, I feel like that's a good shot to call. I think that that's a pretty easy one to see. It's like Ezekiel and Benjamin are clearly close. Benjamin's dad was one of Ezekiel's top guys. That guy did not make it. He has taken Benjamin under his wing. Morgan has taken a keen interest in Benjamin as well. And if Morgan is currently somebody who is anti-fighting Negan, he doesn't want to go to war with the Saviors. He is also somebody then that we need to convert. Or, you know, kill off or whatever. But let's say we're not killing off Morgan. I think killing Benjamin off galvanizes not just Ezekiel, but also galvanizes Morgan, who then in turn could galvanize Carol. So I think a lot of I think Benjamin may be the rock in the road that needs to be unplugged in order to get the kingdom into place.
Yeah. Could it potentially be that we have somebody like Simon show up at the kingdom and then we have a Daryl sighting and then somebody has to pay the price, or then Benjamin is going to step to Simon and that's how we end up losing Benjamin?
Oh, man. I just hope that that doesn't mean that like Simon then in turn has to go as well, because I just want Simon on this show for the rest of time.
Yeah. He should be fine, I think, for a while. So Daryl is going to get asylum here in the kingdom. Alex, how long will it be till we get the Daryl and Carol reunion that we've all been hoping for?
I got to think it's coming pretty soon, within the next couple episodes. You know, to me, it's really just a question of, is Daryl going to run into Carol first, or is Morgan going to feel obligated to go tell Carol about all the people who have died? And maybe you want to, like, you know, unbury your head from the sand at this point, because, you know, regardless of whether or not you want your friends to find you, your friends are finding danger, and, you know, maybe you care to have people you know and trust left in this world.
Yeah. I mean, look, Carol is wandering the woods right now. You know, she's just like, she's out there in the forest. What does Daryl Dixon love? Forests. He loves hanging out in the woods.
He's also
a great tracker. And that's referenced in this episode as well. When Simon and everybody, they clear out of Alexandria, and Aaron's like, we got a Father Gabriel problem. There's no tracks. If Daryl was here, maybe he could track him down. So it's a nice, gentle reminder that Daryl Dixon's really good at tracking people down. So I would bet that he is going to, you know, do his thing. He's going to go off in the woods. He's going to get a craving for a squirrel. The food at the kingdom is good, but they don't have enough squirrel meat. So he's going to go out and he's going to try and forage. And while he's out there, he's going to be like, those Carol's footprints. And then he's going to find Carol.
Yeah, I can envision a moment where, you know, Daryl, like, you know, he gets one of those bows and he's, you know, he's been missing the crossbow. So he goes out there and he puts an arrow in a rabbit right as it gets caught in a snare of Carol's or something. He's like, hey, that's my rabbit. Yeah. No, it's mine. It's you.
It's you.
Like, great little moment.
Yeah. No, it's going to be a 90-minute episode, though, and they're not going to make contact until the final 5 minutes.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
It'll be Following the Rabbit.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's the name of the episode. Follow the Rabbit.
I'd like to talk a little bit about Rosita, because I felt like that she really was especially salty tonight, where I feel like
Salt
that,
Queen Rosita. Yeah.
So many of our heroes, I feel like, have really started to step up. I mean, I don't know if it's the combination of losing Abraham and then the capture of Eugene now, but she seems like
You forget Spencer, Rob.
And Spencer, I guess. Yeah, she seems like she's in an especially bad mood, to the point where when we saw Sasha just trying to talk to her, she's like, look, we just both had sex with the same dead guy. What do you want from me?
Right. Yeah. And she's also like really angry towards Morgan, Yeah. When they're like telling Morgan, like when they're catching him up on everybody, like who got killed and everything. She's like, aren't you going to tell us that you were right? Morgan's like, no. Why are you doing? What kind of beef do you and I have?
Yeah.
I didn't even know you were on the show.
I do Aikido. I would never do something like that.
Right.
But I mean, to say that Rosita's not stepping up to the plate would be doing a tremendous disservice to the spontaneous ability of her as an explosives expert.
I'll tell you what. I'm getting a little sick of her attitude.
Okay.
I don't want anybody with a bad attitude on this team.
Yeah. No, well, I think that that's a fair comment. If we're going to make it through this together, you know, we can all be upset. We can all be disappointed. We can all be a little depressed. But we have to act and we have to recognize that we're in this together.
And I'm sure she feels a good degree of guilt over the Eugene thing in particular. You know, it's one thing to, you know, Abraham.
Well,
and
don't take it out on the messenger.
Oh, right. I'm aware. But these are guys that kind of stood on their own 2 feet for, you know, to some degree. Spencer made his own decision by going to Negan and trying to pull a fast one and so forth. Abraham definitely, you know, seemed to like pick his head up and, you know, make some kind of a choice in that moment. But Eugene is, you know, just taken because of Rosita's actions. Because
of her stupid plan to make one bullet and then not even be able to hit Negan at like point blank range.
So, yeah, that's like if you, you know, you're like, yeah, trust me, this is definitely going to work. And then it didn't work and they punish the only person you got left. Like, she probably feels like, yeah, I really screwed up. And now she's just, you know, lashing out and saving face.
Yeah, to the point that she was even seemingly mad at Rick for, like, leaving one of the sticks of dynamite behind after they're driving away in the car, right,
No,
Josh?
No. I think that she's happy that they left that stick of dynamite behind. She's, like, talking, I don't know, I don't remember if it was Sasha or Tara or somebody. She's like, let's leave this one behind. I don't like the way it looks.
I don't like the look of it.
And so she puts it in the middle of, like, the grassy field, and I think that's the same area
she
that
she didn't want to get art.
Yeah, she didn't want to get any arsed on her. And I think that she succeeded in that mission.
Turns out it wasn't a dud, though.
No, it wasn't a dud. And one of the walkers must have stepped on that. And that's the big explosion at the end of that sequence.
Okay, so let's talk about that big set piece, because that was a lot of fun.
So much fun.
Certainly the highlight of the episode. So what's going on here that Negan's crew, the Saviors, know there's a big herd coming? So they sort of valet parked 100 cars in the middle of the road? Put them into the median?
I think that that's right. I think it's that. It's probably also to keep humans at bay, I would bet. You know, it blocks their path towards the Saviors. I think Jesus says something like, yeah, they're clearly making it hard to get to them. So I think it's just part of their ongoing defense strategy.
Alex, then explain to me, like, did Negan, like, scare up all of these walkers? And is he, like, intentionally, like, pushing this herd into this? Or is this, like, some other just, like, roaming zombie horde?
I got the impression this was kind of, you know, just one of the herds that are out there. I think, you know, over the course of time, the noise that they each make, they gradually find each other, and then they find more. And I think we're at the stage of the game now where it's a bunch of herds kind of out there. There's very few solo zombies anymore. They're very social creatures.
So let me understand this. So basically, like, the zombie population are like the contents of a lava lamp. And eventually, like, they all just glob together into, like, bigger and bigger chunks.
That is a great analogy. That sounds exactly what I'm describing.
How much time have you spent around lava lamps, Rob?
A lot.
I'm curious.
A lot.
Big thing for you in college?
I definitely did have one.
You were in the Oswego lava lamp club?
I definitely did have one. I feel like that they are better in theory than in practice.
Wow.
I forget what the problem is, but they just like, if you have it on too long, you don't have it on enough.
Yeah, you got to let it run for a good 10 to 15 minutes so the lava kind of gets the loosey-goosey flow to it there.
Do you think Rosita would know how to dismantle a lava lamp?
I think she would. You would think so.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing that she's the demolitions expert. I guess it's just something she gleaned from her time with Abraham and Eugene.
I mean,
that would be my guess. I don't think that Rosita has a military background. I think that she's just somebody that Abraham ran into in Texas on their way to DC.
It's funny because she's like wearing fatigues, but it's like, you know, I think she's wearing fatigues when we meet her, but it's like, are you know, do you have some kind of background? Or are you just a big fan of surplus stores? It's impossible to know.
I mean, granted, Rosita is not like the most vividly realized character on this show. I think that she's one of the, you know, one of the most thinly drawn characters on the show. Somebody who we don't know a ton about and really hasn't had much of a story to speak of until this season when she's really taken on a revenge scheme against Negan. So we don't know a ton about her backstory, but I have no recollection of her being military. So it must have just been something that she learned from Abraham and Eugene on the road.
One of my favorite parts of the episode was leading up to the thing where we ended up finding all of the cars parked, was that we have this walkie-talkie. Yes. And no, we're not using it to radio Morgan every single morning. They're actually like listening in on Negan, and Negan does like some sort of weird like PA system, like announcements, like the morning announcements that you would have like in your high school. Yeah. Or like, all right, good morning, saviors.
This
What's
is
going
Principal
on?
Negan. It's
Principal Negan.
Yes.
Today's lunch is shepherd's pie.
Some more announcements. Yeah, we got some obituaries.
Yeah. Yeah. His Fat Joey eulogy was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eulogy for Fat Joey.
Oh, yes. Yes. Not a nope. It was great. Now skinny Joey. Well, he's just Joey. I thought that this was, for my money, the greatest Negan scene that we've ever gotten. So
it was
far.
Really good.
And Jeffrey Dean Morgan isn't even there for it. I think that this is probably another reason why I really enjoyed this episode, is because it was fairly Negan light.
Negan light.
You know, I think when Negan is on screen, bad things happen typically, like, and not like fun bad things happen, even if his dialogue is pretty fun and he really does chew on scenery, Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Mm-hmm. But another thing that Jeffrey Dean Morgan does, and I've critiqued this along the way this season, is he talks so slowly. And the season really comes to a crawl as a result, I think. I think a lot of like these long run times on Walking Dead is because like a Negan scene takes 45 minutes to get
he
through.
He also has the most dialogue. It's funny. I yes. listened to him. He was on, Jeffrey Dean Morgan was on Howard Stern, I think it was back in December, and I listened to an interview with him recently, and he was talking about how he just has like pages of dialogue in the episode. So like Negan has the most lines, and he also talks the slowest.
Yeah, yeah. So I think things really slow down when he's on screen.
And that's why it's a 90-minute episode.
Yes, exactly.
It was only supposed to be
5 minutes. There's only 5 minutes of script in here.
It was a Negan webisode.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, so I don't know, like, it was a quick first monologue. It's happening off screen.
Right.
It's happening while there's other visual information that's being conveyed. I thought there was like this was a really well managed episode in terms of time. Like the time management of this episode was really good, even for a longer episode.
We covered a lot of ground.
Yes.
And okay. You're right. Yeah. Like the first half of season 7, so much Negan time. And, you know, if he invokes a tone, I would say it's like uncomfortably tense pretty much anytime he's on the screen. And I think that probably does speak to, you know, your point about why the first half of the season feels so bleak, is there's just so much time where Negan's just there, like kind of just, you know, gloating over the situation that he's created, which, yeah, you know, we don't really appreciate too much. So,
yeah, when he's not bashing your brains in, like he's like tearing your soul apart, like he's looking you in the eyes, or the eye, as it were, if you're Carl, and he's just like, you know, psychologically tormenting you.
That's, shave me.
Yeah.
Shave Rick. And then make me some spaghetti.
Yeah. 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 So I think that, like, I just think that there's, you know, Negan, I think, is designed to be a character that you love to hate. But I don't know how well that has played all the way through season 7. So I think to kind of reserve him a little bit in this episode was a smart choice. And to lean a little bit more on Simon, who, you know, Stephen Ogg, again, is just so fun as that character. And he talks faster and he has this really weird face that just like is very emotive and expressive. So I think it's a good balance of the Rogues Gallery this week.
Okay, so speaking of Simon, that we heard on the walkie that Negan said, okay, Daryl has escaped. We need to go look for him, send people out there. And it's a little bit of like the Ferris Bueller's Day Off of like, okay, quick, now we got to get back home because before anybody discovers that we're not there. So they got to race back to Alexandria. And
not without
like,
their explosives.
Yes, right. So they got the explosives. And then here comes Simon, not Negan, to ask, where's Daryl? Did you think that Rick was convincing, Alex?
I thought he did a pretty good job. I do like the Ferris Bueller comparison. I now have a picture of Rick just like driving past two girls in lawn chairs, then pulling back up. Hey, Rick Grimes, how you doing? Nice to meet you.
When Daryl went to Negan's land, let my Daryl go.
Simon, I've been sick in bed all day. I haven't been anywhere.
The clammy hands trick, I think, wouldn't work so well in the apocalypse because people would just think you got bitten by a zombie.
Who's Daryl? Never heard that name in my life.
Daryl Bueller. Daryl's day off.
Yeah, Daryl Dixon's day off.
Daryl's day off.
Where is he? So we searched through everything in Alexandria. No sign of Daryl. And I do feel like that Simon, again, took this all pretty well. Josh, compare this to with Gregory at the Hilltop. I felt like that he really put Gregory through his paces.
Yeah, well, I think that he doesn't like Gregory. I think that he, you know, he looks at, and who really does? I think he looks at Gregory and he just like sees just like a spineless little worm. And I think what he does like about Rick and the crew, at least, is that they've got some backbone. I think like even when like Aaron is like, we're just adjusting to the new system. We're trying to get stuff that we think Negan would want. And like Simon, I think like, you know, he like steps up to him and just like has like he's having a conversation with these people because they're not just like he recognizes that these people don't like what they're into, but they seem to be playing ball. And maybe that's a testament to the fact that our guys are good at lying at this point and that they're, you know, good at surviving bad situations. But I think it's also a testament to the types of people that Simon can get along.
Plus, you know, the Alexandrians go out and do their own work. Gregory just allocates everything. Does Gregory do anything except sit on high in his chair in the governor's mansion or whatever he's at?
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. Like, that is the guy that you just show up and take all his scotch and laugh at him. Because what else is he doing?
Yeah. Poor Gregory. That he's gonna
not really right.
Yeah, he's so great.
Yeah.
So
rhetorically,
we end up seeing that Father Gabriel has like cleaned out the cupboard. Simon thinks that this is pretty weird. Do you feel like that they were convincing in terms of talking about how like no, I guess we just ate everything.
I don't know. I don't know how convincing the Alexandrians were in this episode. Obviously, apparently they were very convincing because they leave and they're not upset anymore. But like when Rick is like, Negan took Daryl. Like that's like I think that the answer is probably more like, Daryl escaped? Oh my god, that's so great.
Yeah, oh my god, what happened to Daryl?
Yeah, and then like you wait for Simon to be like, no, this is a bad thing. When we find him, we're gonna kill him. Then you're like,
no. Ugh.
Yeah. Well, we haven't seen him, but if we had seen him, we'd probably hide him.
What did you eat him?
Yeah, I think
just, I know people do that from time to time.
Tell us right now.
Yeah. I just think that like maybe he could have been acting a little bit more surprised. And I think in the moment of going into the garage and seeing that everything was cleared out. Seems like it worked. I think Aaron did a good job.
Yeah.
I think it helps that, you know, as Simon himself states, you know, we're not here for tribute day. Their number one focus is on Daryl. So I think, you know, maybe he gives a little wonky eye to the fact that it's a completely bare cupboard. But as long as we come back on Wednesday and you got something for us, I guess it's all good.
I also want to say that I think that there was some wisdom in what Father Gabriel did, assuming he didn't just run off with all the canned goods.
Which is an assumption.
Yeah. But I think it's sort of like this inside job type idea where that he has stolen all the food and if he puts it somewhere, now it's out of Negan's purview. And now the Alexandrians like will have access to this at any point. And it's not subject to the 50% Negan tariff. Do you think that's a good idea?
Well, you know, Olivia was the one responsible for keeping inventory. And, you know, Negan took her out. And maybe they can just use the excuse of like, well, we haven't, come up with who's supposed to be on inventory now. So we're doing the best we can. Stop killing the people we put on inventory. And maybe we can come up with something better for you.
Yeah, he's a canned good laundering, Josh.
It's a good racket in the apocalypse. You know, you can really make a buck.
You know, Alex, I think you mentioned Aaron just now in terms of how he was doing. We see a little bit of a confrontation between Aaron and his boyfriend. Is he boyfriend or are they married?
I don't know. I don't know if we have confirmation that a ring has been put on it.
Partners, at the very least.
Okay.
Howdy, partner.
They're definitely involved. Aaron and Eric, definitely, live-in domestic situation.
Yeah. Okay. Going on, I don't know if that's the first Eric sighting of the season, but it feels that way. It feels
like
he
was
never
standing around during the Spencer gutting.
Yeah.
He's always in the background, nervousing with his arms crossed somewhere.
When Aaron got his butt kicked,
Yes. But I would say that he is the one that's really down on any sort of conflict. I feel like that he's being a real negative Nancy too.
Well, you know, Eric himself, not much of a fighter. And I think maybe Eric is, worried about Aaron, not just in the sense that obviously he cares about Aaron and doesn't want to see Aaron get hurt. But I think maybe there's an element of like Aaron wanting to step up and sit at the big boys table. And, you got these Ricks and Daryls and all these kind of like hardened veterans out there. And Eric is, Aaron is really trying to be someone who can, step up to everything those guys are doing. But I think maybe Eric knows Aaron potentially a little better than he knows himself. And I don't know that Aaron is, like, he could take a beating like a champ.
Yeah.
But I don't know that Aaron is necessarily prepared for everything that, and as gritty and as dark as this could potentially get here. Hopefully he's ready for it, but I think maybe that's where Eric's coming from.
Do you think that Eric suspects that him and Aaron are very expendable characters in the Walking Dead universe, and he feels like, I think this is a bad idea.
Aaron, yeah. Stay home. Your plot armor is made of Play-Doh.
Yes, yes. Yes, that we are very expendable here. If anybody's going to die, I think that we are probably high contenders in the Walking Dead death draft. Let's avoid all conflict.
Yeah, I would like, I think if it were me, I would prefer like Sir Richard's umpire gear to the plot armor that Eric wears. Like, it's very, very thin. Eric especially, I think. Aaron less so. I think that Aaron has...
he survived Negan.
You know, he survived Negan. I think he's become a presence on the show. I'd be so sad if they got rid of Aaron. I love that guy. Yeah. But maybe, you know, again, talk about the visibility bump. You know, maybe that's a factor in why Eric was presented on the show this week. Maybe we're just being reminded that this guy exists, and it's something that's going to rile Aaron up if we lose him. So I wouldn't be shocked at all to lose Eric. I'd be very sad to lose Aaron, and surprised, in fact, to lose Aaron, but I would not be surprised at all to lose Eric. Sad to lose Eric, I will say.
Okay, I thought Eric was going to die from that broken ankle. So as far as I'm concerned, we're playing with house money here.
House money. That's right. So at the end of the episode, we see Rick and the crew go out to the boat to potentially meet up with Father Gabriel, or at least investigate where Father Gabriel went. And we ended up with them just being surrounded by like 100 people. Josh, do you have any sense of who these people are? Is this a comic book story?
I don't think so. Alex, I mean, you just ripped through the comics. Yeah, do you recall these people, Alex?
Nope.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think probably, you know, not the first time that the show has just invented characters. Is this a thing that the show loves to do? So I have no insight into who these people are. They don't seem especially friendly.
I mean, is this just going to be another member of the Allied forces to take on Negan? Because I feel like that we're starting to get a little lopsided in terms of the forces that we have. I mean, I felt like pretty good about Kingdom plus Alexandria plus Hilltop. And then I guess plus Oceanside. And then who are these people?
Yeah, not for nothing, by the way. Like when they're leaving the Hilltop, and like Rick and everybody, they're talking openly about like, we need numbers, we need more people, we need guns, we don't have enough. Tara, at any point, would you like to speak up? At any point, would you like to break your vow to the Oceansiders and say, hey, you know what? I know this community that's filled with all these badass chicks who've got all of the guns. Every last one of the guns that ever existed, they have them. Come on, Tara.
I mean, even if it was just like, is there anything that we could trade to Oceanside? Maybe one of these communities has something that they might need. Could we trade them loaves of bread or anything? Yeah. Would they trade us a gun for anything?
Right.
Plenty of fish, but yeah, I don't know how they're fixed for other essentials of the diet.
I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I don't know. It feels like at this point, like if you're you know, gonna take a chance on making a compelling speech to a guy named King Ezekiel, like you could go take a trip to Oceanside and give that a whirl.
Can't grow sorghum on a beach. I'll tell you that.
Sorghum farmers again.
No.
All right. Anyway, so to go back to these people who are, you know, who seem to be from the Boots Kingdom. I don't know what we want to call these people. The boats, the boots. It's, you know, they're the boat dwellers. They seem to, you know, maybe they worship that boat.
The boot dwellers.
But they're surrounding our guys, and like even Rick at this point, like the final shot of the episode of him just like laughing is like, oh, this is ridiculous. More people that are trying to kill us. Come on.
It's just keep on coming.
They keep on coming.
Maybe they'll take him back, and you know, their new leader is Father Gabriel. I mean, who knows?
Yes. Oh my God.
And Gabriel.
It's like C-3PO
with the Ewoks.
The Ewok village. Yes. Yup. Nub. That's exactly where I was going. Oh my God.
Gabriel, yeah. Tell them to let us go, or you will smite them with your magic powers.
Yes.
Rick, I don't have any magic.
Just do it.
Yeah, in comes Qui-Gon Jinn to use his force powers. Yeah.
Perfect.
Sorry, deep cut if you weren't listening to our season one rewatch podcast.
Okay, so I think we're all on the same page. Walking Dead gets off on the right boot to start off the back half of season 7. But where do we end up going from here, Alex? Where do you suspect the story takes us next week?
Well, I think this was, you know, breaking big ground tonight because we talked about it. You know, they got one over on the Saviors tonight. It's not a big victory, but having them come in looking for Daryl, knowing that they know where Daryl is, and having them leave unsatisfied, this is like the first time that the Alexandria group has, you know, gotten one over on the Savior. I mean, sure, they took out that colony, but the big aha moment is, oh, you barely did a dent. We've got so many of these outposts. So this is, to me, a bit of a turning point. This is really where we see Rick and them, like you said, go on the offense a little bit, starting to, test the waters. And so they had success here. So that's got to embolden them to try something else, going forward. And I think, hopefully we see more and more kind of, pilgrimages to the kingdom and the hilltop, trying to get people on the same page. We've got this walkie so we can kind of monitor what they're doing. Hopefully nobody accidentally hits the button and lets Negan know that we're listening. If we can move forward like this, I think it's looking promising. Sir Richard is right to smile, I think, if only for a moment.
Josh, what's the first place that we get our standalone episode?
Oh, my God. See, so that's the thing. Like, I didn't watch the preview for next week's episode or anything, but I guarantee you, like, it's not going to be long before we get back into The Walking Dead's old tricks. Like, this was an episode that I enjoyed tremendously, but I've been burned by this show way too many times to be, like, more optimistic than pessimistic. Like, I'm still skeptical of where the show could go. I doubt that the show is going to be able to keep up the pace that it's set tonight. I really would love for that to, I would love to be proved wrong on that. I'm not highly optimistic on that front. And I think that you could see, like, I could very easily see the Daryl Carroll episode. I could very easily see.
Could we stick with Rick and Father Gabriel and the boot people?
Yeah, I could see that. I think certainly we need elaboration on that. We need follow-up on that.
How about Skinny Joey's rise to power?
Skinny Joey, yeah. No, I think that that's not impossible as well.
Skinny Joe.
No, but genuinely, like the Negan and Eugene episode is coming, right? Like, that's all happening.
That feels like an episode 3 to me.
You know, exactly. Exactly, 100%. So I think that we're still going to, format-wise, it's going to be a lot of the same in that regard, which is a bummer because I think that seeing the ensemble together tonight really proved to me how great that crew is when they're working together and how much fun the show can be when everyone is being showcased as a group in their unity and everything like that. So I don't know. I think hopefully at least the show is still fun. I think that it nailed a sense of joy tonight that I'd like to see applied across the rest of the season.
I am looking forward to Negan and Eugene stuff,
though. That'll be fun. It will be fun. It will be fun. Which is, if they can do it in a very...
You are one weird guy.
Just apply some levity. I think levity is an underrated ingredient when it comes to The Walking Dead. I think that there was a really good amount of it tonight.
I do believe I am currently an occupant and am gaining residency at PP Pants City at this moment as we speak.
I heard you bit Dwight's pecker. I like that.
Yeah.
Try biting Lucille. She's a little bigger than what Dwight is packing.
Ho!
Ho!
All right. Excited for the return of Negan in the back half of season 7. Anything else from tonight's show?
No, I'm sure we'll get to it on the feedback show.
Okay, of course. Feedback show coming up later on this week. You want to get your feedback into us. We're probably going to record that, I think, Wednesday morning. TWD at postshowrecaps.com or go to postshowrecaps.com/voicemail to leave us a voicemail message. Always fun to go through your voicemail message and hear what you guys have to say about the episode. Of course, you could subscribe to the podcast and make sure you don't miss any of our Walking Dead episodes by going to postshowrecaps.com/TWD, iTunes, and a lot of other fun stuff coming up this week on postshowrecaps.com. Of course. All right. So, Josh, you can follow him on Twitter at Round Howard. What are you going to be writing for Hollywood Reporter about this episode?
I'll have a recap up tonight.
Boom.
Yeah. So keep an eye out for that.
Oh, yes. And of course, you could follow old reliable Alex Kidwell at Alex Kidwell.
Indeed you can.
Yes, yes. Yes.
Still the leading Father Gabriel apologist until number one. Until it all goes terribly wrong for me, I'm sure.
Okay, all right. I'm at Rob Sestrino. Very fun to be back with you guys here tonight for the first of 8 episodes in a row of The Walking Dead here in the back half officially of season 7. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say on postshowrecaps.com.
Hashtag. What do we got? Daryl's Day Off.
Hashtag Daryl's Day Off. Can we beat that?
I like it.
Okay, let's go with it. Hashtag Daryl's Day Off. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say. Take care, everybody. Have a good night.
Bye.